And good morning. Good morning. It is 8:04 in the morning. You are listening to Positively Revolting on your very own community radio station. That's KBOO Portland.
Hi, I'm Lynn. Over there is Ani. And that was Loudon Rainwright Talk the Third, talking about the state of the planet.
Go Loudon. That's what I say. This morning, we are delighted to have with us David Cobb by phone. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
David is a lawyer and an activist. He's ran for president along with running mate Pat LaMarche on the Green Party ticket in 2004. He's worked tirelessly and is working tirelessly to end the stranglehold that corporations have in our country. He's now the chief spokesperson for Move to Amend. And like I said, we're delighted to have you with us this morning.
Well, thank you so much. Is it Ani?
Ani,
And yes, Ani. Thank you so much.
Yeah, certainly. Let's start with some just basic information for our listeners. So let's go ahead and explain what corporate personhood is. What does that mean and how that came into being?
Well, Ani, first and foremost, let's acknowledge what we already know, and KBOO listeners, I think, are particularly aware of, but it's worth to set the context. Corporations today are not merely exercising power. They are ruling us. They are literally making the fundamental public policy decisions that affect our lives, whether it's issues of health care or what food is available to eat, our transportation choices, even whether this country goes to war or not. Those sorts of decisions are being made ever more by unelected and unaccountable corporate CEOs, and we, the people of the United States, are left to choose between paper or plastic at the grocery store or Coke or Pepsi, or we're given interminable
iPhone or BlackBerry. We heard it on the Republican debates the other day, the choices they got to make.
iPhone or BlackBerry?
Right. iPhone, BlackBerry, MSNBC, CNN. These are your choices, yeah.
Exactly. You know, consumer choices. But, of course, we know that real democracy would mean that we actually were able to participate in a meaningful way in the decisions that affect our lives. And we at Move to Amend believe that a linchpin, not the only thing, but a linchpin of how corporations have hijacked all of our institutions is this legal doctrine known as corporate personhood, which is really a shorthand for the illegitimate legal doctrine that allows corporations to claim constitutional rights, which allows them to overturn democratically enacted laws.
I found it, hi, David, this is Lynn, the other host. I found it ironic that the 14th Amendment had something to do with that.
Well, it's beyond ironic. It's shameful, of course, because the 14th Amendment was one of the so-called Civil War amendments. The 13th Amendment finally abolished the outrageous pathological depravity of slavery in this country, which, of course, was codified in the original Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The 14th Amendment actually specifically says no person shall be denied equal protection of the law or due process of the law. The 14th Amendment is one of those core ideas that make it clear that in our constitutional framework, individual human rights are to be protected and they cannot be violated even by the majority or democracy. It's the way to codify the idea that individuals, including minority interests, have rights that cannot be violated by the majority. That's a profound and important idea. So you're right, Lynn, to say that it's ironic is, I think you're being subtle. I'm just being more explicit.
It was early.
It's shameful.
Shameful
because of the historic legacy of the 14th Amendment to correct this depravity of slavery in this country, and then for corporations to claim that they have these 14th Amendment rights. And to, as if it's not bad enough, after the 14th Amendment was passed, there was another group of people who said, oh, that's interesting, no state shall deprive any person of their rights. Well, we as women think that all these laws forbidding us from voting must then be unconstitutional, right? And the court said, wrong. Women are not persons for the purposes of the 14th Amendment in a case called Minor versus Happersett. And just about 15 years later, the court said, oh, but corporations are persons with constitutional rights.
And, right. this is where I think we all sort of have our heads sort of spinning around. And obviously, you know, this is a legal fiction at best. It's a farce. To name a corporation as a person and give it a person's legal rights, whether women have them or not, that's one thing. But let's look at really what that does. So we have a corporation which is not mortal, right? It doesn't have a 70-year lifespan. So a corporation also cannot be jailed, per se, for wrongdoing. You can be fined, but not jailed or not, you know, and you don't have your sort of, well, natural lifespan that a human being does. Yeah, you know, I kind of think no one should be executed. But again, you know, the corporation has sort of superhuman powers and the legal backing for personhood. Yeah.
Yes, you're right that in our culture and society today, these transnational corporations have superpowers.
Historically, that was not true,
though. I'd like to back up a moment and point out that at one time in our history, the corporation as an instrument or a social construct was tightly controlled.
Mm-hmm.
From the beginning of this country up till for really the first 75 years. Now, of course, we know that this is that from 1789 up to the turn of the century is not the land of milk and honey, because we know slavery is still existing. Women are subjected to absolute patriarchy that's codified in the law. Workers are being oppressed. Natives are still subhuman. But what I am saying is the corporation is tightly controlled during this time period. And what do I mean by that? Well, for one thing, you mentioned that today corporations are immortal. They can live forever. But for the first 75 years when a corporation was created, it was for a very limited time frame, typically 5 to 10 years, at which point the charter, that is the document that creates it under law, it automatically dissolved. In addition to that, before you got the privilege to incorporate, not the right, the privilege, you actually had to get it passed by the full legislature. Today, of course, it's as simple as filing a piece of paper and paying a little bit of money with the Secretary of State. And it goes even deeper than that, Ani, because for the first 75 years of this country, in order to get the privilege, not the right, of incorporating, you had to prove that there was an existing public need that was not being met by either governmental agency or by existing private enterprise.
And that was a fine idea.
And it's even better than that, because if at any time, even within that short 5 to 10 year time period, if you were ever found to be acting outside the public interest by, I don't know, killing workers in your coal mine or destroying the ecosystem of the Gulf of Mexico or Alaska or spewing toxics into the air or water, anything that was found to be acting outside the public interest, your corporate charter could be revoked. It was the functional equivalent of the corporate death penalty, but of course a corporation isn't alive to begin with, so it doesn't trigger any of our moral or ethical qualms about the death penalty.
Right.
It just says this business can no longer exist. The point is that there was a time in this country where the corporation as a social construct, as an instrument for gathering resources and doing certain things, were, I would say, not only tightly controlled, but appropriately controlled using the democratic process.
And so how was that eroded?
Well, it happened over time, Ani. The reality is that the ruling elite, though at the original founding of this country, did not need the corporation to be able to amass great capital. They were, in fact, using other institutions, you know, like slavery, cultural institutions like male supremacy and patriarchy. They were also using other economic institutions, and workers were being mightily oppressed. And what happened over time was, as social movements began to take root in this country, and of course the Knights of Labor and early efforts for workers to organize, of course the women's movement of Seneca Falls, and of course the abolitionist movement. And the abolitionist movement, which culminates in the Civil War, as all these movements are taking place, the ruling elites see that there are, and I will call them at core, democracy movements that are demanding more power over their own lives, more power over how to shape society. The the ruling elite then begin pouring their resources and efforts into the political process. And so it's a constant fight and a struggle at the electoral arena. In addition to that, they realize, aha, we can go into the courts and claim that these legal efforts, or these, statutory efforts, creating of laws legislatively that are attempting to control us. If we create these corporations that have constitutional rights, then we can claim that our rights are being violated, even if we're oppressing and abusing people. It's a crazy history, and if folks are interested in that history, we outline this on the website Move to Amend, which is the national campaign that's trying to fight back.
Excellent, and I see you are their chief spokesperson now. And you are coming to Portland.
Well, I should. I saw that, and I want to correct something.
Okay, please do.
I am a spokesperson, but as a feminist and as a green, as somebody who shares power, I would never call myself the chief spokesperson.
It seemed a little weird, but you know, I only go by one agenda. So you are in town tomorrow, and when I say town, I mean Portland, and you are doing a day long training to train organizers. About this in the Move to Amend movement.
Yeah, that's right. I'm very excited to be coming to Portland, or I should really say coming back to Portland, because we know that Portland is sort of a special place, and I've been here before. And I should just say, at the risk of sounding too sycophantic, I think part of the reason Portland is such an awesome place is because of KBOO Radio. So listeners, just remember that the
you're
only
sycophant
reason
right
you're
up
able
to there.
Hear a
that's
conversation
fine.
Like this is because you're listening to non-corporately filtered news, information, and analysis. So remember that on Pledge Drive.
Thank you.
And back to your normally scheduled programming. And that is that I'll be there on Saturday, tomorrow, from 9:30 to 6 at the First Unitarian Church at Southwest 13th. We'll be doing an all-day training that will allow people the opportunity to not only hear and really dig in deep to this history, but also to lay out our plans and strategies and goals of the Move to Amend. We'll have workshops where you get the opportunity to do role-playing, to have yourself try out talking about the history and talking about the need to amend the Constitution to abolish corporate personhood. We'll be having some strategies and trainings on earned media and how to use it, social networking. And then we'll also have some strategy discussion, because I'm very happy to tell you, Ani, that this movement is starting to generate even deeper and more provocative questions. And I like it when people tell me, Cobb, you're not going far enough.
Absolutely.
We need a deeper movement. We need a more militant movement. And I say, right on, let's have that conversation.
Excellent. And well, let's have a conversation with some listeners. We would love it if you would call in with your questions and your comments, your thoughts on this. To KBOO now, 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning to join us on the air, 503-231-8187. And also we have the ability to chat via Gmail, and that would be at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com.
And once again, I'm Lynn, I'm here with Ani, and we are speaking with David Cobb this morning.
And so here we are.
Goes.
David, you were talking about that radicalization that you're seeing and experiencing now. What are communities doing to fight corporate power? What shape is that taking?
Well, first of all, thank you for that question and for how you framed it, because I want to be very clear that to me, amending the Constitution, as big as it is still just a tactic. In other words, really what we're about is building a democracy movement. And that movement can take many, many shapes. I would tell you quite bluntly and quite honestly that as I see the rise of community-supported agriculture programs, that is a form of resistance, if it is done with the intention of resistance.
Yes.
For example, if you just thoughtlessly go out and buy food, that's one thing. But if you say, I understand that the corporate takeover of food production and distribution systems are actually part of the problem of destroying the planet and creating these inherently oppressive structures. So instead, I'm going to intentionally and deliberately go out and participate in a community-supported agriculture program where I'm supporting locally local farmers who are growing organically decreasing my carbon footprint by doing so. I would argue that that alone is a form of resistance. And that we know is happening. And I know that on KBOO Radio, y'all frequently talk about the rise of the community-supported agriculture program. Likewise, great programs like City Repair,
yes,
if they're done intentionally and deliberately, can be seen as absolute resistance. Likewise, electoral politics, if it's done intentionally and deliberately, can be seen that way. So I want to first and foremost really acknowledge that there are a wide plethora of different ways of resistance. And if I can be so bold, KBOO Radio itself, I think of as resistance radio. The fact that we, the people, can talk and do talk to ourselves without the corporate filter, I think that that's a form of resistance. But to sharpen the question, which, and that is this, that there are now, there is now a growing awareness that we have a strategy to actually take our country back and to break the stranglehold of these corporations, that the illegitimate legal doctrine of corporate personhood allows them. And so now we are having resolutions passed at local universities, in local congregations, and even in city and county governments, saying corporations should not be considered persons and we need a constitutional amendment. But it doesn't stop there, because throughout the country now, local communities are actually passing binding laws that say corporations cannot engage in fracking in our community, which is, of course, a horrific way of trying to extract remaining natural gas from abandoned wells, which poison the water table, et cetera. Well, there are many communities now that are just avoiding the regulatory process and simply saying, no, you can't do it. Oh, and by the way, we're going to write into our law that in our little local community, this corporations do not have constitutional rights to overturn this law. So when I say that there is a broadening and deepening movement of resistance against corporate power, I'm very serious. And I want to acknowledge again that that resistance can take many different forms, and something as simple as what you choose to eat is a political act, and it's up to you, the listener, to decide whether you're going to do it as a passive consumer, allowing corporations to hijack your mind without you even realizing it, or whether you'll become a conscious, sentient being and making the kinds of choices to reflect the principles and values that you have.
Well, here's a choice. How about a caller?
Let's go ahead and let's talk to Kelly. Good morning, Kelly. You're on the air.
Possibly.
Hello, Kelly. Well, let's try Nathan. We'll try Kelly again in a moment. Nathan, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. What's your question or comment?
Well, I'm really appreciating this conversation. It's something I've been thinking a lot about recently. And I'm liking what I'm hearing about the multifaceted strategy, and was wondering if we could talk for a second about the role of entrepreneurship in this, in specific local entrepreneurship. That was my question.
Okay, Nathan, thanks for bringing that up. I think I would actually, I'll react this way, would love to hear what you think. First, I want to be very clear that I actually support commerce. I support appropriate technology and appropriate business. I'm very happy to share with you that in my community we have created and support a local independent business alliance to support and encourage other people to support local independently owned and operated businesses. And that actually helps not only the business but actually the community. Because economic data shows time and time again that if you spend a dollar in a local independently owned and operated business, that same dollar will circulate about seven times in your community. It's called the elasticity of money for those folks who study economics. However, if you spend that same dollar on the same type of product at a corporate franchise, that dollar will only circulate a little less than three times in your community before it leaves. So it's actually to our benefit to support locally owned and independently operated businesses. In addition to that, there's a growing network of these efforts. There's one called the American Independent Business Alliance, and I believe Portland has a chapter. There's also another sister organization called the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies that is taking works root. So just in terms of commerce alone, I absolutely support entrepreneurship. And Nathan, to go one step deeper, I'll tell you this. The spirit of entrepreneurship is creative enterprise. And what's most exciting to me is to be seeing all the creative impulses that are being harnessed around transformational use of food production and distribution, co-housing and other different ways of doing housing, different ways of doing transportation. I mean, y'all got a pretty good, I would say great, mass transit system, but it's going even deeper because people are experimenting with shared cooperative car ownership and biking. The same thing is happening, of course, with building design. So we're seeing the entrepreneurship unfold. But the problem is this. If we only do these alternative systems and don't address the corporate capitalist system and the legal system that is basically allowing niche efforts like this, then they'll always just be alternative. I believe that we need a political, economic, and social movement that makes those things the mainstream, the norm. And that's why I support entrepreneurship and from the bottom up, and I want to be part of a movement that's saying, let's create public policy, city, county, state, and even federal policy that encourages that kind of spirit.
All right, thanks. You know, we've got a question on Gmail here. Someone named John has emailed us asking to please speak about the need to make your movement international so as to create a level of global playing field. And he wants to know, what about
absolutely.
The United Nations Global Compact?
Yes, absolutely. Let's be clear about something. The creation of the modern transnational corporation was actually created as part of global empire. The earliest corporations were the East India Corporation and the Africa Trading Company and these huge mega efforts to engage in military conquest and stealing of resources. So we shouldn't be surprised that the transnational corporation of today is engaging in these same sorts of practices. That's why we need to actually have a global response. But, of course, we can only act locally, but we can act in our local communities where we live, work, and play and build networks with what's going on across the world. Of course, in North Africa and the Middle East and Latin America, we're all just inspired by what we're seeing. And especially, I will say, in Greece, the corporate media is trying to describe Greece as some sort of crisis in free fall. I look at Greece and I say, right on, sisters and brothers. These people are gathering together. They're doing teach-ins. They're talking about new cooperative models. It is true that the corporate capitalist model is failing in Greece. The so-called structural adjustments that are being forced by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and these other arms of international global corporate capitalism are trying to squeeze the people, but the people are fighting back. And they're fighting back using all the tools in the toolbox, including nonviolent civil disobedience. Because at the end of the day, if we're going to really be a true nonviolent revolutionary movement, we have to be willing to disrupt the system.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that disruption can simply take the place of withdrawing from their consumer choices. Sometimes it can be taken, I mean, we know that second wave feminism, quote, disrupted the system simply when women refused to be treated.
Well, though it's out of the news now, Wisconsin.
I'm sorry?
Although it seems to have bounced out of the news a bit, what happened in Wisconsin, I thought, was...
Wisconsin is a perfect example. And I'm very happy to tell you, Ani, that we are actually reconvening, that is, the democracy movement in Wisconsin, the weekend of August 26, 27, and 28. And if you go to the website democracyconvention.org, we expect between 500 and 1,000 people to get together, and we'll be running a series of conferences called The Media and Democracy, Racial Justice and Democracy, The Militarism and Democracy, Economic Democracy, Local Democracy, and then I'll be leading an entire, not just a panel, but an entire series of panels, a conference within the convention called Constitutional Reform, where we actually ask the question, is it better to do amendments or should we have a constitutional convention? How far should we go? Should we include a constitutional right to health care and access to quality education? I mean, we are trying to take ourselves as seriously as the problems that we are facing today. And so John's question about the need for a global response, I completely agree. Mm-hmm. I am inspired by other social movements that are taking place, and we're trying to work with those folks who are leading the charge in their own local regions and in their own national governments and begin to network our global response.
David, as an organizer, how do you address folks, how do you reach people who just aren't getting it, who see corporations are, well, they're what gives us jobs. I mean, what's good for business? If you drive business out of Oregon, where will we work?
Well, that's a deep question, and as you might not, you'll be not surprised to know, there's a multiple ways of answering it.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, the first thing that I try to do when I meet such a person is to listen and to actually find out what it is that they're really saying and if they're really concerned. Sometimes I find, sadly, that they're not really wanting to deliberate, they're not really wanting to converse, they're not really wanting to communicate, they're just wanting to shout me down. When I meet such a person, quite bluntly, I say, have a great day, and I leave.
Uh-huh.
I mean that seriously, because I'm not interested in just having somebody yell at me, or I'm not interested in yelling at somebody else.
Right.
But let me go further. If they're really engaged in a conversation, I try to ask them a series of questions, knowing that most people actually agree with me. And I know this because the ABC News CBS poll that came out showed that 80% of the American people disagree with the idea of corporations having constitutional rights, especially the ability to make political contributions. And by the way, Ani, that means if you break it down by political identity, 85% of people who self-identify as Democrats, 82% who self-identify as independents, and 76 who self-identify as Republicans agree with me. And, of course, if you're a Green Party member, 100%.
Right.
But the point is that I already know that if I'm patient and I really listen and I try to engage whatever their real questions are, that they're likely to already more or less agree with me. And so I start from that orientation. And then when I do, I point out that corporations as entities are actually not creating jobs. Corporations as entities don't create wealth. They concentrate wealth and power and decision-making. Now, corporations can do different things in society as a way to organize resources, organize labor. But if we want to talk about jobs, the reality is this. The large transnational corporations, the Fortune 500, have been a net loser of jobs over the last several decades. And in the last year, it's gotten acute. They're not just losing jobs. Specifically, they're outsourcing jobs. They're taking jobs out of this country and intentionally sending them overseas. And in fact, President Obama's new, quote, job czar is from the General Electric Corporation, the former CEO there, and they brag about it and actually have lost 50,000 American jobs that they have sent overseas. And it gets even deeper, because what the economic engine that is actually driving whatever recovery we're happening, in other words, the job creators, remember Nathan's comment about entrepreneurs?
Mm-hmm.
It's small businesses that are actually the only thing keeping this economy afloat. So I try to talk to them about the difference between Wall Street and Main Street and how the Move to Amend effort actually supports Main Street America. We support local businesses. We're not against corporations. We're against the legal idea that a corporation can claim constitutional rights and overturn laws and corrupt our political process. And when if I've got enough time and they've got enough time and they're really willing to talk and I'm willing to listen and learn from them and they're willing to listen and learn from me, it's often the case, Ani, that they end up saying, you know, I may disagree with you on other issues, but in terms of this corporate power and corporate personhood thing, I agree with you.
Very nice. We have Francis on the line. Good morning, Francis.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm pleased to hear the conversation about corporate personhood. Corporations are not people, as we know. They have no conscience. Conscience is profit. And I'm pretty much these days pretty dismayed about how things have been done in my name just for corporate profit, such as the warmongering that's going on in Libya right now. But I'm wondering, my question is, in addition to the legislative movement, is anybody trying to revisit the case in the judicial side of things? I remember, as I understand it, it was Southern Pacific Railroad versus Santa Clara County, and Southern Pacific Railroad was claiming the 14th Amendment rights to get some kind of tax breaks that were awarded to the people but not the railroad. And in the ruling that came from that, as I understand it, it was the general summary of the ruling was kind of misinterpreted and actually stated that corporations had personhood. Has that been revisited in the courts? Has anybody tried to bring cases to where people can use that 14th Amendment to say that they want the same rights as corporations are getting these days?
Well, Francis, the short answer is yes. There are cases that are brought constantly, and sadly, the current federal court system, from the Supreme Court all the way down to federal courts, have claimed that this is, quote, settled law. And it's not just as if one case was brought, and because there was a mistake made at the head note, that was a oops kind of mistake. So, yes, as a lawyer, I've brought cases. We've tried the legal system. I believe that the current legal system is lost to us. I still use it, but I also think the regulatory system is lost to us, even though I still use it. You see, I believe in using all the tools in the toolbox. And, yes, we have tried that approach, and we'll continue to try that approach, and the courts continue to tell us that we're wrong. But we're not going to stop. We're going to do the same thing that the civil rights movement did with a legal strategy, a judicial strategy, a political strategy, and ultimately, I believe, a direct action strategy. And I want to remind you of this, Francis, that remember that it's the court, the Supreme Court or other federal courts, who are overturning these laws. And yes, we should still fight in that framework, but as a lawyer, I can tell you this. The amount of justice that we'll get in the courtroom is directly commensurate with the amount of hell that we're raising in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, unless we have a social movement that is broad and that is deep, we're not going to be able to change these core legal doctrines like corporate personhood. And the best example of that, I believe, is to look at the great seminal case of Brown versus Board of Education that finally uprooted the Jim Crow segregation laws of the South. Now, those laws have been challenged time and time again, and courts repeatedly in state courts and federal courts, and even the Supreme Court in Plessy versus Ferguson had said separate but equal is perfectly okay. But there was an ongoing movement in the streets. There was political struggles at the ballot box. There were cases continuously being brought. And I want to ask you this. Do we think that Thurgood Marshall, the phenomenal lawyer that he was, who ultimately went on to sit on the Supreme Court, he was the lawyer in that case. Do we really believe that he made some legal argument that nobody had thought of before? Or do we think that he gave such a compelling oral argument that those nine racist Supreme Court justices all of a sudden saw the light? Or instead, do you believe what I believe, which is that those 50 years of struggle by the Anti-Lynching League and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and churches and synagogues and people struggling and working together actually began to shift the culture such that the court had to act. And I guess that's where I'm coming down. Yes, we're in the courtrooms. Yes, we've got some good lawyers, you know, myself included, that are trying to develop a legal framework for this. But at the end of the day, this is not a legal problem. It's a cultural problem.
All right. Thank you. And just in case you happen to just tune in, this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani. And we are speaking this morning with David Cobb about the move to amend and all corporate personhood and direct action and all sorts of things. And we have got another caller on the line. I believe Bill is on the line.
You know, I'm listening to this and I'm wondering if corporations are deemed citizens. As a citizen, if I violate the law, state, federal, or otherwise, I can be seized. My person can be seized. And yet, if a corporation violates the law, all you can do is make a corporation insolvent. You can't really seize the executives. You can't, unless they've done something just blatantly criminal. But if I
even then, I think
in question, it kind of creates this situation in which I think maybe we need to pass or amend certain aspects of saying that if you want to claim citizenship, then the individuals who run and head your corporation ought to be able to be seized like any other citizen in this country and at least brought into court if things are in question. And I think that's the big difference for me is that I don't know how anyone could argue that and say that I'm a citizen when they're not held responsible because they cannot be seized, their freedom cannot be taken. So if they are engaged in tax evasion, all you can do is seize the corporation. But the individuals who don't necessarily have the community in mind then just move on somewhere else. So I don't know, maybe I'm off, but that's my thought.
Thanks very much for your call this morning.
Well, yeah, thank you very much for the comment. And I think you're right, and what you're getting down to is the nub of this. This idea that a corporation should be able to claim constitutional rights is not just illogical, it's perverse. And it perverts not only the ability of us, it perverts the entire promise of a democratic republic. It makes it impossible for we the people to actually engage in creating the society that we want to live in because they can go in and overturn laws. This is crazy. And then when you add on top of the point that Ani made at the beginning of this conversation, that these corporations nowadays can live forever, they're immortal, it allows them to amass so much wealth and capital and decision-making authority that they have become basically governing institutions. Mm-hmm. So you're right that this is illogical. You're right that it prevents us from being able to act. And you're also right in saying we should actually be changing we can pass legislatively different laws. We should be challenging in the courts. And this is what's exciting me. And that is that I am seeing the beginnings of this movement. And so I'm going to encourage listeners, if this makes sense to you, if this conversation seems like something that you want to get involved with, please go, at the very least, go to the website movetoamend.org and sign the motion. It's on the upper right-hand side. Just click that, and you'll join 112,000 and growing people. This is a movement that is broadening and deepening every day, even though the corporate media is completely ignoring us. We're on the move. The second thing that I'll ask is that you yourself participate by sending that URL, move to amend, to your friends and family members on email, and put it on Facebook, and you know, use the social networking tools that our sisters and brothers showed us can be so effective in North Africa and the Middle East. And then the third thing I'll do is invite you to this training from 9:30 to 6 at the First Unitarian Church on Saturday, and let's figure out how to work together. Let's inspire and conspire together.
And just to let folks know, pre-registration is required for the training tomorrow, and you can find out more, again, at movetoamend.org. You can also find out more at Alliance for Democracy. The Portland chapter of that is the major sponsor, I guess, for this training tomorrow.
And not just a major sponsor, they are of this particular event, but I do want to give a big shout-out to the Alliance for Democracy.
Oh, yeah.
They are one of the anchoring organizations of the Move to Amend coalition, and it's pretty exciting because Move to Amend is not another organization. It's actually a coalition of existing groups and organizations that are seeing that the corporate power and corporate rule is at the very heart of all of the problems that face our society. The Alliance for Democracy has been around for a long time. The Portland chapter has been chugging along and has really, really provided some fantastic leadership to the Move to Amend national effort. We've also, as I said, got over 112,000 individuals who are participating. There are local affiliates that are springing up. I mean, this movement really is starting to take off, and if folks want to get involved locally, the Alliance for Democracy exists. There's also, I think, talk about forming a Move to Amend affiliate so that a group that is directly dedicated to corporate personhood and abolishing that legal doctrine is at play. I mean, things are happening, and I would encourage people to find I like to think of it this way. I can't and won't take responsibility for creating the peaceful, just, democratic world and dismantling every aspect of the current oppressive society, but I will make this pledge. I'm going to figure out my assignment, my part of it, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And I'm going to encourage you, the listener, to figure out what is your assignment in this movement. And then to take that assignment and do it with good cheer and an open heart and a loving manner and connect with other people doing their assignments. And the next thing you know, not only will we win, but we'll create the jumping, joyous planet that we deserve and we'll be happy together. I mean, when we really think about it that way and tell the story that way, I mean, it's an exciting thing to be actually part of this movement.
Oh,
absolutely.
And another exciting thing. What's coming up on KVOO this morning? At 9 o'clock on Veterans Voice, Marvin and Bill interview Arlene Edwards, who was a nurse in Vietnam at the 45th Surgical Hospital in 1968, treating thousands of soldiers with severe combat casualties. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today, and we'll go straight to Flashpoints, featuring an interview with co-editor of Counterpunch, Alexander Coburn, about truth, lies, and the U.S. role in Libya. Also, a look at the mounting protest in Greece, as pressure grows against austerity measures, the reality of the health effects of the Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan, and federal intervention on behalf of the nuclear industry in Vermont. At 11:30, we hear remembering Stonewall, the first documentary on the riot that started modern gay activism. And thanks to KVOO members for your support. If you're not a member, you can become one now by going to kvoo.fm and clicking on the tip jar to make your contribution.
I just got to say this about that. At 11:30, remembering Stonewall, I just mentioned to people, I've heard this documentary over the years. It's, again, one of the first ones made. This documentary inspires me and renews my energy and makes me cry every time I hear it. So there's my listening tip for this morning, 11:30, remembering Stonewall, be there. We have just about 12 minutes left with David Cobb this morning. Time is fleeting. I do want to mention 503-231-8187 if you would like to join us with your question, comment, thoughts on the air this morning. I want to look at, I mean, these are so important to be active in this. And, you know, in my book, Corporate Power and Ending Corporate Personhood, controlling corporations, getting them back into a place where they are not destructive in our society. You know, this is huge. This is, to me, one of the big central focuses because it really has its tentacles into everything else. You know, corruption in electoral politics, the environment, the food we eat, the air we breathe,
what drives the cars we drive.
You know, just as, whether we get to sit on sidewalks downtown or not. You know, there are all of these issues really interconnect around the issue of corporate power. So to me, this is a very much a central core issue. And therefore, I want to know, like, how can we address cynicism? The folks that say, yeah, we know corporations and have the stranglehold, but what can you do? They're so huge, we can't fight back. You know, so cynicism or apathy.
Well, the feeling of being overwhelmed by the enormity of the situation.
You know, those that may agree, but just feel overwhelmed or apathetic or too cynical to move. How do we deal with them?
Gosh. Yeah, that is a deep question, and we will actually be dealing with some of that at this workshop on Saturday. But in a nutshell, I would say it this way. Let's recognize that there's a difference between apathy and cynicism. Apathy means you just don't care. If there is somebody who really and truly says, I don't care about these things, then for the most part, I just move on because there's too many people who do care.
True that.
And as my daddy would say, where I'm from, go for the low-hanging fruit. If somebody is really like, I don't care, then I say, have a nice day, and I move on because there are plenty of people who do care. But the people that I do try to reach out to are those people who are cynical. They say, I care, I'd like to do something, but I just don't think that we can. We can't win. And that leads us into cynicism, despair, even nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Lynn, I think that what I try to do with those folks is first and foremost listen and to acknowledge that how they're feeling is completely understandable. It's normal. They should, let them sit with that for a while and then remind them that every movement in this country started from the same place that we are, whether it's the abolitionist movement or the women's power movement. I'm not going to say the women's suffrage movement, because those women who gathered in Seneca Falls were not just saying we want to vote. They were saying we want to be legally persons.
Indeed.
With
right.
full rights. So the women's empowerment movement of Seneca Falls, frankly, second wave feminism, the trade union movement, the civil rights movement, all of these movements actually began from a place where it seemed impossible that they would be able to win. So I guess when I meet somebody who says that we can't win, I point out to them that there are many examples. Everything that we consider just and good in this country, for the most part, actually, when it began as a resistance movement. So there is a history that says that our side will win if we do the work of building a movement. And then also what I try to do is to point out, you know, you don't have to think about what is the overall arc and do everything yourself. There really is something to be said for figuring out what your piece in this movement is and to do it as well as you can and as joyfully as you can and to find other people. Don't be isolated. We are not alone. We are everywhere. And we need to find opportunities to get together and to celebrate, and yes, sometimes to cry and hold each other and weep in anguish about how messed up the world is, but we also need to get together and inspire each other and to thank each other. And for goodness sakes, progressives, will we spend more time patting each other on the back and saying, atta girl and atta boy and thanks for doing that? I get so sick and tired of progressives who get together and agree on 98% of things and then spend most of their time on the 2% that they disagree with.
Oh, well, yes.
Knock it off.
What did Molly Ivins used to say? Remember, Molly Ivins used to say, freedom fighting takes a lot of beer.
Well, another Texan after my
yes,
own heart.
I know.
Indeed. You know, we have David on the line. Good morning, David.
Morning. I've been sitting here trying to phrase my question, and you just brought up the movements that have inspired great things, and you mentioned abolitionism, and I'm a product of Kansas, and Kansas is what produced John Brown, who, in a very reactionary way, helped get slavery off the board. Anyway, I mentioned Kansas because it's very easy on a coast and in a place like Portland to say it how it is, but how do you get into the hearts and minds of people in the middle of the country who are very much define America but have been overtaken by corporate interest in everything they hear, everything they listen to, everything they buy?
David, it's a good question. I want to point out Wisconsin, not on the coast. But, David, do you have a response to David?
Yes, very quickly. I think, David, that's a deep question. It's a good question. We don't have time to give it. We can't delve into it as much as we should, but I'll tell you this. Thomas Frank wrote, What's the Matter with Kansas?
I was going to say that.
Kansan himself, who said, why is it that this place, Kansas, that was a hotbed of abolitionism and radical economic action at the turn of the century, has now become the ultra-conservative place? And he says, actually, it's not ultra-conservative in terms of economics, but culturally it is. And the problem is that, frankly, the establishment Democratic Party treats rank-and-file workers and ordinary Americans with elitism and disdain. They're not willing to go into pool halls and bowling alleys and actually talk to people with respect. They have this sort of liberal elitism that working-class people can't stand. And that the Republicans and the right wing have framed their arguments around ethics and morality, and their social values are respected. I think the problem has been that we have not been willing to engage Kansans and people of that political persuasion with a kind of respectful dialogue to say, you know, we also support hard work. We also think that people ought to take personal responsibility, and we think that the economic model of Wall Street America is actually destroying the efforts of Main Street America. See, I think the problem has been actually a failure of the Democratic Party leadership, not of the progressive vision per se, but we haven't done the work of actually engaging them.
All right, and we have time for just one quick comment from Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Yes.
And quick question or comment. We're just about out of time.
I'm interested in finding out about the relationship to the straw man corporation. If he's dealing with some of the what his approach to taking back our individual sovereignty is, if there's anything like that going on with the movement, if they're conscious
okay.
of that.
All right. Thanks very much, Mark.
Well, I'm not sure. We're running out of time, so I didn't really understand the question, but if you would call 707-269-0984, somebody can talk to you in detail about whatever it was. I can tell you this, that the resistance is taking innumerable forms.
Right on.
They are taking, and we want to work with you and other people to do that. But I'm sorry, but I didn't understand the question. So, Ani or Lynn, if you could help me,
well,
that would be great.
I think that basically we really are just about out of time, and I would love it if you could give people a little contact information when they decide in about 3.5 minutes that they want to get totally active and engaged. Who can they contact? How can we connect each other up so that this movement grows and gets stronger and we end corporate dominance in our time?
Well, first and foremost, please sign the website at movetoamend.org, and we'll be in touch with you over time as we continue to work together. The second thing that I would encourage you to do is forward that to other people yourself, using Facebook and Twitter and email. The third thing you can do is call us at the Move to Amend National at 707-269-0984. The other thing that I want to encourage you to do is to contact your local Alliance for Democracy Portland chapter, where they have been deeply involved in this effort and continue to be deeply involved in this effort. So there are lots of ways for us to connect, and I hope that some of you might register for this site and be inspired to come on out and work with us at the First Unitarian Church this Saturday.
Wonderful. David Cobb, thank you so much
thank
for joining
you.
Us this morning. Hope to
it
talk
was
to you
again. My pleasure. And I just got to say, ladies, it was really a pleasure to be engaged in a really thoughtful conversation where I hope I did my part too, but so that we shared the radio space so often. And I got to say it, that men are very bad about sharing space on the radio. And y'all really have a deft touch.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you this morning, David. Thanks so
All
much.
Right. Much love. Peace.
Yep, take good care. Much love. And a little correction to something said earlier. The estimable, irredoubtable, and amazing Kathleen made a small error. Remembering Stonewall is actually airing at 11 this morning, not 11:30. And again, I got to say, it's one of the most moving documentaries I've ever heard. I'm always happy to get another chance to hear it. 11 o'clock this morning, Remembering Stonewall, whether you're queer,
get your hankies out.
Even if you don't know any queers, and if you live in Portland, I got to ask you, how'd that happen? But even if it's a beautiful, moving documentary, and certainly if you are, it's our history. Let's learn it. And let's continue to be positively revolting.
Until 2 weeks from today.
The dollar went down and the president's sick. Who's in charge now? I don't know. Take your pick. A new disease every day and the old ones are coming back. Things are looking kind of gray, like they're gonna get black. Don't turn on the TV, don't show me the paper. Don't wanna know he got kidnapped or why they all raped her. I wanna go on vacation till the pressure lets up. But they keep hijacking airplanes and blowing them up. It's been a hard day on the planet. How much is it all worth? Getting harder to understand it. Things are tough all over on Earth. It's hot in December, cold in July. When it rains, it pours out of a poisonous sky. In California, the body counts keep getting higher. It's evil out there, man. That state is always on fire. Everyone has a system, but they can't seem to win. Even Bob Geldof looks alarmingly thin. I got to get on that shuttle, get me out of this place. But there's gonna be warfare up there in outer space. It's been a hard day on the planet. How much is it all worth? It's getting harder to understand it. Things are tough all over on Earth. I got clothes on my back and shoes on my feet. A roof over my head and something to eat. My kids are all healthy and my folks are alive. You know, it's amazing, but sometimes I think I'll survive. I got all of my fingers, all of my toes. I'm pretty well off, I guess, I suppose. So how come I feel bad so much of the time? A man ain't an island. John Donne wasn't lying. It's been a hard day on the planet. How much is it all worth? It's getting harder to understand it. Things are tough all over.